To everybody here this morning, Thanksgiving is probably my favorite holiday. It probably is for a lot of you too, but surprisingly, although I love Thanksgiving, it is hard for me to remember to be thankful during that week. And I've noticed recently just how easy it is for me not to be thankful or to look for whatever's bad or to look for whatever would, you know, ruin the holiday before I start to look for things that help the holiday. This isn't just a holiday thing for me. I have a habit of finding the bad first. And I know this is not surprising a lot of you. You're nodding like you know this already. I was just sitting up here thinking of all the things that I ruin quickly. I'll ruin it. And just, you know, really quick. Just running through my head. Yesterday, my football team won, Notre Dame. So, you know, I know some of you are cheering. Yep, that's right. But, you know, and no matter how bad we beat the team, and we beat them bad, but no matter how bad we beat them, as soon as the game was over, I thought, well, we have to play Alabama at some point, so season's done anyway. Here come the Roll Tides, of course. I can't enjoy a win because I know what's coming. And some of you, how can you give up so easy? Have you seen Alabama play? The tide is high, and it's, you know, so I ruin that really easy. I'm getting up to come up here, and I have my coffee in my hand. What happens? My tie goes in my coffee. And ruin that sermon, and everybody's going to be looking at the coffee stain. Luckily, I don't know if that's Scotch Guard or something, but I got it off quickly, although I got it on the pew. Ruin that. My son is playing in the state championship game again, 2 years in a row, and so he won the playoff game. I say he like he was on, you know, it was him. Yeah, he was carrying the team. Yeah, so he won. They won. We won. You notice how it's always we won, but they lost. Yeah. So we won, and we did that. And then as soon as I get home, I think, all right, we're going to state. And then I think, but if we win state, I'll have to buy him another championship ring. And right after Christmas, that's just not a good time for me. So I'm thinking, if they lose, but he has a good game, that would be better, right? I mean, some of you are like, oh, I can't, but come on now. I mean, inside, aren't you really with me on this? You know, if it was your son, wouldn't you think to yourself, if he had 210 yards, but they lost, it's still a good game. And we're not out any money. Y'all see how fast I ruined that? I mean, just quick, ruin it. It is easy not to be thankful. Isn't it? It's just so easy. During the Lord's Supper, I hear kids scream out. I hear Kristen's kids scream out. I hear Myrna's kid scream out, and I look out, and then I see Jacqueline and Jamie have brought their daughter this morning, and it's easy. We just went into a restaurant last night. We walked in, and this kid just the minute we walked in, the kid screamed. It was like a three-year-old, but it screamed, and it just instinctively, as soon as it screamed, I walked in and went, oh, no, looking for a place to sit in the back, but because I'm aware of how fast I'll ruin something, I made it a habit this morning when I come in just to be happy and note anything and everything and try to find a reason to be thankful. And so this morning when Kristen's kid screamed out, or it was Myrna's kid, I don't know if it was baby Joanna, I don't know who it was, but when they did, it was two of them. I can't pinpoint which one, it was. But I just smiled. And I thought, it's easier not to be thankful, but if we'll put some effort into it, how much better is it for us to be thankful than to find the negative, than to wish to lose? It's almost better we could realize the victories that we have. Jamie and Jacqueline's baby, I don't know of a baby who's more loved in this room right now than that baby. And it's just, if we'll just take some time and give it time and put some effort into it, it's not just this Thursday that we could be thankful. Our whole lives could change. We could be thankful every day. Wouldn't that be a monumental thing? Maybe not for you, but it would be for me. To learn to be thankful in whatever the circumstance, doesn't that sound like a Bible verse? In season and out of season, we learn to be thankful. So this morning what I wanted to do, and y'all remember, I try to preach to you what I need to be preached about to me, is that I thought we would just take a small text like Ephesians 5, and if you have your Bibles, I want us to go there. And I always tell you, we're going to stay there. We won't move. So you know that's a lie if I say that. I'm not going to say that. But if we go to Ephesians 5, and what if I just say the only other text we'll go to is Psalm 27. So if you can find those two, and we'll flop back and forth. But if you got your Bibles, I just want to go there. In Ephesians 5, I thought what we would do is to get us ready for this Thursday, because I know we're going to have food and family and football and parades and Black Friday shopping, and we're off work, we're out of school, and, you know. In the midst of all that, I want us to remember to be thankful. And not just, this isn't a sermon to get us ready for Thanksgiving. I want us to use Thanksgiving to get us ready to live the life we need to be living. We need to be living thankful lives, not just one day a year. A Christian life is one that is thankful. And you can identify Christian people by how thankful they are. You can. And so what I want to be is I want to be identified instead of, well, there goes Adam, Mr. I hope they lose so he doesn't have to, you know, pay money. There goes Ebenezer, you know, or there goes that person. I want them to say, oh, you know, Adam's always thankful. You know? And it doesn't matter what. He tries to find something to be thankful for. And I think there's a method to this, and I think Paul's on to it. And so what I want to do is just listen to these three verses, and I think it'll get us ready for Thursday, and then Thursday will get us ready for, well, the rest of the year, next year, life. Ephesians 5, verse 15. We're just, look at these three verses that Jaheim read. Ephesians 5, verse 15. My Bible has, be very careful how you live, not as unwise, but as wise. Anybody got the old King James in here still? Anybody still carrying the tried and true King James? Nobody? Wow, I've never been to church and nobody had it. Where's Bradley? We got one. There's still somebody holding on to it. I'm going to read to you the King James because I like it better. And that's rare that I'd say that, but we're saying it today. See then that ye walk circumspectly, not as fools, but as wise. And when the King James uses this word, when the Greek text uses the words it used, it has this idea about walking on a steep cliff with a big drop off. You know, it's like, you know, walk real, you know, carefully like that. How many of you can keep your balance on the high beam? You know, it's the text, it's almost as if Paul is telling us to watch every step that you take as you live. But I got to tell you, I don't watch my steps very often, and I don't watch them very well. I live my life full throttle. I mean, in like fourth gear at like 6 RPM, you know, it's almost as if I'm trying to get to everywhere too fast. Church, we speak too fast, we move too fast, we react too fast. Some of us answer a question before we've even heard it. We press the throttle, we put too much on our plates, and we don't dare slow down. I think it's even possible for some of us, even in the name of God, to do things too fast. Some of us want to right the world too fast. Some of us want to fix our problems too fast. But I want to tell you all this. When you speak too quickly, when your words are too hasty, then what happens is that you do things before you're ready. You say things that don't need to be heard. You teach before you're taught. And we build too high before we build deep. What happens when we just hurry, hurry, hurry all the time? You don't watch where you're going. And you end up falling. Psalm 46, verse 10, it still has great words, seven words. Be still and know that I am God. And church, there's not a lot of verses that need to be our mantra, but that's probably one of them. It's to be still and know that I am God. I spoke to a preacher recently, and he was talking about going to a new church. He's going to try out for this, or he did try out for this church, and he wants to speak there, and I was asking about how it went, and he said there were no kids at the church. And he's got kids. He's got like an 11-year-old and a 5-year-old or a 4-year-old. I don't know. He's got kids. He said there were no kids at the church. You know, they got a junior high, classroom, but you know it's like their junk room. They house their junk in it. They got a high school class, but that's got mice, you know, because nobody's in there. He said there's really no kids at all. And I said okay. And he said, so I don't know if I'm going to move there because they don't have any kids. You know, I don't want my kids to come on, you know, Sunday night and Wednesday nights, and they've got nobody there. I got thinking about how I grew up. I was like the only person in my youth group for years. And I got to thinking about my own kids and how many Sundays they just sat on the pew, stared at me. Sunday nights and Wednesday nights, of course, a lot of them, they were asleep. They think I didn't see them, but they're, you know, Sunday nights or Wednesday nights. But I thought about just how many Sundays and Wednesdays they spent. They didn't have any kids. And I'm not saying that to say, you know, my kids could do it. Why can't your kids do it? I'm saying that because I think it taught my children when they went to church and they were around adults for long periods of time, it taught them how to sit and be quiet. And there is great value to learning to be quiet. It's like we want things to entertain and help and keep us all occupied, but really, do we need more of that? I mean, do y'all need another app on your phone? How many times do you have to swipe to get to the app you need? Are we up to 8 now? Just keep going. It's in there somewhere. I think maybe if we just watch where we step, take longer to get there, step lightly instead of speeding up. I spoke with someone yesterday about their Thanksgiving plans. I said, you know, what are y'all, I never met this girl. I said, what are y'all doing? She said, well, we've got to go to my mother's, and then we've got to go to his dad's, and then we have to go to his grandmother's. And whew, I wish we'd go to his grandmother's first. And I said, why? She said, she loves to visit. And I kind of laughed, but then I thought, when did visiting become a chore? When did visiting become a chore? We try to cram everything in. We want to emphasize results and goals and destinations. And we lose sight of the journey. We lose sight of why we do what we do. We just try to get it. How many of you have more than 2 or 3 places to be on Thursday? It's just go, go, go. And none of us stop to savor it. How many of us have to eat Thanksgiving 2 or 3 times on Thursday? And because we have to do that, we enjoy none of it. I want to remind you of a feature in the Psalms. And it's a feature that if the Psalms were written today by our culture, they would be a lot shorter. They wouldn't be so long. I want to show you what I mean. I want you to turn to Psalm 27. I told you that was the other text I wanted you to look at. I want to show you Psalm 27. Let me show you how the Psalms work. You know, when I was in third grade, when you write poetry, my third grade teacher taught us how to write poetry. If it's a poem, you'll recognize it's a poem because it does something. What does it do? That's right, it rhymes. That's right. Still to this day, I can't get out of the third grade when it comes to somebody say, read this poem. I say, man, this don't rhyme. It ain't poetry. You didn't do it right. You know, well, of course, they didn't do it right. But if somebody wrote a song or a poem, I think, well, if it doesn't rhyme, I don't know who's going to sing it or who's going to say it. That's not poetry to me. Now, that's kind of being negative. Of course it is. But 3,000 years ago, in order to be poetry, you don't have to rhyme. You do, however, if you're going to write poetry 3,000 years ago, if you write poetry, you have to do something called a parallelism. You don't have to know this to go to heaven, but you got to know this just for a minute, okay? What is a parallelism? Parallelism is when poets write, they write a line, and then they write the exact same thing, and they say it differently. Some of y'all's parents used to do this. They tell you to do something, and then they tell you the exact same thing differently to make you think in your head they've told you 2 different things, but really we just told you the same thing twice to make sure you heard us. Let me show you. In Psalm 27, look in verse 1. Watch how this works. The writer says, the Lord is my light and my salvation. Whom shall I fear? And instead of moving on, he says the exact same thing. He says, the Lord is the stronghold of my life. Of whom shall I be afraid? Let me ask y'all something. What is the difference between saying, whom shall I fear, and of whom shall I be afraid? Isn't it the same thing? It's the same thing. We just said it differently. It drives me crazy. I hate when people do this. You see that negative mind of mine coming out? When people say something, I think, just get to the point. You already said this already. You know, let's get on with it. The Psalms don't know how to do that. Look in verse 3. He does it again. He says, though an army besiege me, my heart will not fear. Though war break out against me, even then I will be confident. What is the difference between an army besieging me and war breaking out against me? It's the exact same. Come on, man. I can make this psalm a fourth of what it is and say the same thing. Look at verse 5, last one. In the day of trouble, he will keep me safe in his dwelling. He will hide me in the shelter of his sacred tent. What's the difference? He'll keep me safe. Keep crying, girl. It'll keep me safe. Not too much, but look, no, I'm kidding. It'll keep me safe in his dwelling. He'll keep me safe in his tent. What's the difference? Can we just say it once? But here's what the psalmists know. The psalmists know there's power in stopping and enjoying the moment and saying it two or three different ways. Church, when did it become such a chore to slow down and think of some other way to say something good? Remember the old phrase, measure twice and cut once? We've lost that. We're in a rush to cut. So this Thanksgiving, and for the rest of this week, and I hope for the rest of our lives, we will learn, take your time. Let's just take our time. What's the hurry? What's the rush? Take your time. Number 2, verse 16. My Bible has, make the most of every opportunity because the days are evil. I love the King James. King James says, redeem the time. Redeem it. Don't just take your time. Make the most of your time. So what's the difference? What's the difference between taking your time and making the most of your time? On a quick glance, you may say, nothing. Not true. The other night, my plumbing got stopped up in the sink. Thursday night. I cooked like 1 million pounds of meat, threw it down the drain where all that fat just stops it up. So, you know, water's going back and forth. I'm thinking I got to call a plumber. Now, really, I could just take it apart and do it, but I don't want to do that. I got things I got to do. I got dishes I got to clean up. I'm in a hurry. And now we got to stop life and fix the plumbing. All right. So I take it apart. Now, some of y'all have taken your plumbing apart and put it back together. That takes like, what, 15 minutes? I mean, but taking your time means you don't just take the plumbing out because there's water in this sink. So when you take the plumbing out, what's going to happen? I just moved into this house. These are new cabinets. So if I flood my kitchen, my wife's going to kill me when she gets home. So I need a bucket. I need a towel. I need multiple towels. I'm going to take my time, right? When you do something, you need to take your time. Took the plumbing out. Got it all. Got it done. When I tell y'all this little project took me an hour and a half, an hour and a half. And it's not because I'm bad at what I do. It's not because I don't know what I'm doing. I mean, I don't, but that's not the reason why. The reason why is Izzy was in there with me. And somehow we started in on conversations about colleges and about life and about money and just about us. And, you know, a little project that needs to take 15 minutes took an hour and a half. But I got to tell you, that was the best hour and a half of my whole week. There's a difference between taking your time and making the most of your time. Y'all see it now? It's kind of like when you take a trip. You're going to fly or going to drive? What if we drove? The kids will roll their eyes. Ugh, I'll roll my eyes. I don't want to do that either. But if we're going to take our time on this trip, and while we're on this trip, we're going to make the most of our time and talk. We'll do something revolutionary. We'll talk. Y'all see the difference? Learning to be thankful means we not only take our time, but Paul says we redeem the time we have. We make the most of that time. And there's another reason we do that. Y'all see the end of that verse 16? Paul says, because the days are evil. The Message translation says, these are desperate times. When Paul wrote this letter, he's in prison in Ephesus. Ephesus is a prosperous, bustling, booming city. Y'all remember the Fodor's guides when you used to travel? If they made a Fodor's guide to Ephesus, when you'd open it up, the place, the number one place you need to think about, Washington, D.C. If you go to Washington, D.C., what's maybe the top two or three places you got to go if you've never been to Washington, D.C.? What are we going to say? The Capitol building? Probably. Maybe the Washington Monument? These big things. If they made a Fodor's guide in the first century for Ephesus, on the front page of the Fodor's guide is the Artemis Temple. It's the temple of Artemis. In fact, it's one of the seven wonders of the world back then. So when Paul's in Ephesus, he's in this city. This, in fact, it's the glory of the province of Asia. It's probably the most important city in the Roman province of Asia. Artemis is called Diana by the Romans, but I found this out this week. Artemis is the goddess of sex. So they build a temple to sex, and it's a tourist attraction. You got to pay to get in this. By the way, they don't have any age limits. Bring the kids. Be a good family day. That was a joke. The central portion of this temple is a statue of a woman with over 80 breasts. And the symbol is unfettered sexual freedom. Bring the kids. If you think that we are a heathen society, let me tell you, you have nothing. We have nothing on the first century. You think, oh, these kids today, the world has seen worse. And Paul, knowing he's in this city that promotes unfettered sexual access and freedom, in the same decade that Paul writes the book of Ephesians, a poet of Rome writes of the Ephesian people. He says, their morals are lower than dogs. And Paul knows that in times like this, what we need to be doing is not only watching our steps, but making the most of our opportunities. Because these are desperate, desperate times. And church, I think we could say the same thing about our own culture. I think in this day that almost makes us be negative, I think it would do us some good when we have the opportunity to make the most of our time when we are with people that we don't get to see very often. Make the most of our time with people who love us just as we are, because I got to tell you, not a lot of people love me as I am. I mean, they love me as long as I behave. Make the most of the time when you're with people who miss you when you're gone. I know there's a lot of people y'all are going to visit on Thursday that you really don't want to be there long because they like to visit. But there's not a lot of people. I will assure you, there are not a lot of people in your life. Matter of fact, you go on and count them. I bet you don't get past your two hands. Count the number of people in your life who love you just the way you are and miss you when you're gone. Count them. I bet you don't get past this. So if we're going to be with those people, why don't we take some time and appreciate the time we have? That's why I tell people, when they join a church, when they join UNA, I say, hey, where are you going? Take your time. Stay here a minute. People want to meet you, and you'll want to meet them. But if you're a person who comes to church and I got to go, this probably ain't the church for you. I mean, we'd like your attendance. I guess we'd like your contribution. But this probably ain't the church for you. And the reason is, being a part of a church means more than just showing up. It means being dedicated to people and loving people, taking your time and making the most of the opportunities. There's one more, then we're done. This last verse, chapter 5, verse 17. Paul says, therefore, do not be foolish, but understand what the Lord's will is. I didn't know what to do with that verse until actually last night. So I was kind of limping on that one. 50 years ago this year, on April 3rd, 1968. Martin Luther King gave a speech during the sanitation worker strike on April 3rd, 1968. Now, what makes this speech so amazing is that the very next day, Martin Luther King will be assassinated by James Earl Ray. The very next day. And he gives this speech in Memphis. And I was listening to this speech, and a phrase caught my ear. Let me just read you some of this speech. He says, Martin Luther King says, suppose God were to come in and to ask me this question. Suppose God said, Martin Luther King, what age would you like to live in? And King goes through, you know, the Roman times and Greece and Egypt. He goes on to the days of Abraham Lincoln. And he just kind of, you know, takes everybody through history. And he arrives at the troubled times of 1968. And King says, I would say, Lord, if you'd allow me to live just a few years in the second half of the 20th century, I'd be a happy man. Now, that's a strange statement to make, King says, because the world's all messed up. The nation is sick. Troubles in the land, confusion's all around. That's a strange statement. But I love this line. King said, but I know somehow, only when it is dark enough can we see the stars. King goes on to say, we've got some difficult days ahead, but it doesn't matter with me because I've been to the mountaintop. I'd like to live a long life. Longevity has its place, but I'm not concerned about that now. I just want to do God's will. I fear no man. Mine eyes has seen the glory of the coming of the Lord. And in 24 hours, the man's dead. How is it that a man can live in that time and say, boy, if you ask me what day and age I'd like to live in this time right now. How does a man stand up and say that, knowing that people are out for his life? And the reason that that man could say that is because he had a thankful heart. Church, it takes a grateful, thankful heart to see the stars in the darkest of skies. And there are some of us here today whose skies are pretty dark. But I will tell you that if we can condition our eyes to be thankful, then it's not the darkness that we see, it's the stars. And I don't just want us to do this for this Thursday. I think the invitation this morning needs to be more than that. I don't just want to extend an invitation this Thursday. Well, the preacher said we need to be thankful, so let's start listening. What I'd like for us to do is to start thinking about taking our time. Wherever you have to go today, you ain't got to get there that fast. Leave earlier. I mean, don't leave right now, but, you know, leave earlier. Take your time. And when you get there, make the most of the time you have. If you're going to see them kids, hold them kids just a minute longer. If you're going to see mama, stay with mama just a minute longer. If you're going to see some friends that you didn't want to see, forgive them one more time. Just one more time. You ain't got to commit to hold. Look, just do it. Well, I know, but I have to forgive them again. Well, then forgive them one more time after that. Just one more time. Church, I think if we could learn to be thankful on Thursday, we could learn to be thankful any day. And then you never notice the cries of children become music. And the sight of people that we didn't want to see become the most joyous part of our whole day. And the darkest of skies become lit up with stars. And you know what? Them stars didn't just come out. They've been there the whole time. You just chose to see them now. Let them light your path. Let them light your life. Let us be thankful. Let's start now as we stand and sing.
Calvary, is your life he freely gave. From realms above, Jesus freely came to die, that I might live someday with him on high. I love the Lord, he has been so good to me. He gave his life from sin to set me free. No greater love than his could ever be. I love the Lord because he first loved me.
Be seated, please.